Bender Anderson and Barba PC is in the unique position of being able to offer their clients proven solutions derived from the depth and breadth of their experience. They offer services for homeowner associations in the areas of general counsel, common fee collection and foreclosure, document revisions and amendments, rules enforcement, association borrowing, contract review, developer issues, construction defects litigation, and mediation and facilitation of meetings. Their best practices strategy delivers professional expertise to their clients in the most cost-effective manner possible. Bender Anderson and Barba PC extensive experience means that they have been exposed to a vast range of problems, which gives them the ability to anticipate problems and offer effective solutions. They promote community and responsible leadership in the associations they serve. We also educate our clients, preparing them to address the challenges of running an association. Call Bender Anderson and Barba PC at 203-248-6440. That's 203-248-6440.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Ask the Experts. I'm Brian Forster, where each week on the Talk of Connecticut, we'll have an in-depth conversation with a different member or members of the Greater Hartford community. And today, we have attorney Ron Barba of Bender Anderson and Barba.
Hey, Brian.
Welcome back, Ron.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
So we can get right into it. I know we talked a lot last time. We're going to talk some more about what do you want to talk about?
Well, many of the things that come up in my practice at Bender Anderson and Barba deals with insurance for condominium associations. So I thought maybe it might be a good idea just to focus on that. Last time we talked about the importance of finances for associations. I think spending the time today just talking about the insurance issues and then bringing somebody in, somebody I know to be an expert in the field, I think it's also going to be. So you're getting two experts for the price of one today.
The show is called Ask the Experts, so it's good that we can do it plural. So getting right into it, why is insurance important enough to use for the entire program?
Well, as I said, insurance-related issues at Bender Anderson Barba really is almost a daily issue. We constantly take calls from our clients and property managers and even some attorneys about trying to resolve some of the insurance related issues that face a condo association because of the complexity not only of the statutory framework, but matching that up against facts of a particular situation and trying to meet the governing document requirements as well. So it's a complicated issue, but in a very important one when you're talking about ultimately dipping into your unit owner's pockets.
Yeah, so we're talking about insurance. Are there specific issues that make insurance so important for community association life? I mean, can you expand more on that?
Yeah, just as a preface, look, we have a relatively short time today to get into this issue, and I can tell you that we could spend hours really digging into it. So I would certainly qualify my comments that we're going to cover some of the basic issues. But I think that when you think of insurance, I think boards and unit owners need to think about it as a critical factor in their financial security of their community. Certainly, their insurance coverage is mandated by each association's governing documents. It's regulated by the statutory framework governing associations. It is a significant portion of the budget for each association on an annual basis, and increasingly so. It becomes every year, it seems to me, that coverage issues, policies, and the areas of coverage become increasingly complicated. There are changing coverage parameters. There are cost pressures in terms of associations trying to match what they can afford, what their unit owners can afford, against what they can get covered, and to make sure that they're covering and they're actually meeting their statutory requirements. And that you can't speak about insurance coverage without at least acknowledging the litigious nature of our society these days. And I'm not going to go too deeply into that. I'm not going to get on that soapbox today. But it does have a factor in terms of what associations face in increasing premiums on an annual basis. So I think that the best way for us to sort of address or at least to get into the issue is to start talking about what the law requires. And as we've said before, and I've in our previous shows, the Common Interest Ownership Act largely covers and guides associations in the state of Connecticut. It is it really applies to very old associations. A lot of it relates back to them, and any association built after 1984 is certainly covered by its provisions.
That's the Common Interest Act?
Common Interest Ownership Act.
Common Interest Ownership Act.
And in the industry, we call it Kiowa. But it is the Common Interest Ownership Act, Connecticut General Statutes 47-200 and forward. So it's a fairly large act. It's a fairly complicated act. And if you pick it up and read it, it's going to look a lot like stereo instructions. But in context, I can tell you that it contains tremendous information, but also imposes upon associations great great responsibility, in particular in insurance. So under the Kiowa, 47-255A really speaks to associations' obligation to obtain and maintain insurance coverage required to a reasonable extent. So just in that first line, it's saying, look, to the extent that it's reasonable, association board, go ahead and buy insurance coverage. But if it becomes unreasonable, there are provisions for that. If an association is such a risk risk-rich environment, many insurance carriers won't even insure them, and they're thrust into what's called a pool, and that means many auto drivers that have also had a lot of accidents understand this. You pay a much higher premium because of your risk your risky nature. So some of the insurances that need to be purchased as part of the statute include property insurance. There has to be some way, just like your home, you want to be able to, if it catches on fire and burns to the ground, you want to be able to rebuild it. Statute requires associations to buy that kind of insurance. There has to be commercial liability insurance. Somebody slips and falls on the association's property. You want to be able to insure for that loss.
Especially with all the ice and all the snow that we had, the cold weather. I mean, does that fall under that?
Without reservation, I can say slip and falls are such a huge portion of the losses and the claims against associations. There's only so much you can do when you've got a wide area to remove snow and ice, and invariably somebody will slip and they'll fall and they'll become injured. And because it's the association's responsibility to cover those areas, they'll be certainly named as responsible parties, and that insurance is critical to especially when an injury is serious, to keeping the association alive. And the last insurance that really is important is fidelity insurance, which protects the association if there's any financial impropriety, some sort of malfeasance on the part of somebody that's got control of their money. It's required, and that coverage is also important in those rare instances where you have theft. We can start with property insurance, because that really, I think, everyone can relate to property insurance. And what the statute requires is that the association purchase insurance enough to replace a destroyed building or property. Does that mean that it just replaces the shell and the unit owners are on their own on the inside? No. The statute now, as it's been revised, means that the association has to buy insurance that covers not only the common elements, not only the limited common elements, but also the units as well, and any improvements inside those units. So it really covers the entire building inside and out. And I think by necessity, they want it that way. Imagine the association builds the shell and the unit owner doesn't have insurance, and you're left with a hollowed out hull. You don't have an owner that's going to want to stay there. Right. So the place starts to fall apart. So it makes sense to do that.
As a layperson, that's why you get insurance, so you cover yourself in the event of disaster. I mean, that's why I have insurance.
Chris Rock says they should call it in case blank.
I'm familiar, and
that's the nature of it. So, but it's more than just the buildings. It's the units, the fixtures, and the equipment contained in there sometimes. And you really want to shop that insurance in such a way as to make sure that some of the critical insurance, coverage covers those things like equipment. There are many instances where there'll be gaps in coverage, and unless your agent, your broker understands the nature of your building, they're going to miss that. So you need to spend a lot of time shopping that around. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later with somebody I think that can really be a great source to it. So there's also the insurance that covers certain parts of a unit owner's personal property. You know, if their duvet is destroyed in a fire, you know, there'll be coverage for that as well. It's quite amazing. So property insurance is extremely important. It can be a little complicated. It has to be the full replacement value of the project facilities, and it has to be at the actual cash value of the personal property owned by the association. So where the association owns certain things, you actually want to be able to get that cash value back. Now, there may be deductibles associated with that, and I don't want to go too far afield on that, simply to say that, as with all insurance, there are deductibles. The second kind of insurance really is general liability insurance. We talked a little about the slip and falls. That needs to include medical payment insurance and amounts to be determined by the executive board, but it can't be less than the amount that's specified in the declaration. And as an aside, the declaration very often will have a very low amount if it's an old declaration. There are provisions in the Kiowa that actually allow for increases in percentage costs that sort of make up for the differences. Although I would suggest that old documents need to be revisited from time to time, and the old documents really need to be amended. That's for another show. At this stage, though, the general liability needs to cover all occurrences commonly insured against for bodily injury, property damage arising out of the connection with the use, ownership, or maintenance of the common elements. Also cooperatives. Let's not forget that common interest communities can be cooperatives, can be planned unit developments, can be condo associations. There are different permutations all covered by Kiowa, and these insurance requirements also apply to them. And lastly, for many of the associations in and around waterways, flood insurance. Now, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Association or Administration, I think it's called Administration, requires that by statute requires those properties within flood zones a certain amount of flood insurance. But I have to tell you that minimum requirement is often not sufficient to meet the needs of an association. So when shopping flood insurance, and we're going to talk a little bit about that too, the association really needs to consider what its exposure is and whether or not the minimum requirement under FEMA is sufficient or whether or not they need to look deeper into that. Fidelity insurance, as I said, is fairly straightforward. Somebody steals money, especially somebody from the board, you want to have that money restored back to the association. Oftentimes in embezzlement, the person doesn't have any money to begin with. And while there may be criminal sanctions, you may be out a lot of money. And that's money, frankly, that's unit owner money paid in with good faith, and people have a right to expect that it's going to be secured. The way to do that is through Fidelity insurance. You're going to find that, and this is the part I think that really becomes important for associations, the issue of deductibles. As you know, you have car insurance, right?
You better believe it.
All right. So
I drove here.
For the record, he has car insurance. He can keep his registration. But
attorney-client privilege or no?
Well, I think the fact that it's going over the airways may give you problems in that regard. There may be a waiver. But I would tell you that, as you know, you have a collision insurance subject to some part that you're going to pay, $500, $200, $250, something like that. That's your deductible. Well, just like that, associations and their insurance policies have deductibles. Deductibles on property and general liability can range. You know, at this stage, I think the industry minimum is somewhere around $5,000. But those deductibles can have – the level of your deductible can have an impact on the amount of your premiums. And all a deductible is really self-insurance. Okay? So if you as an association board decide that you're going to self-insure for $5,000, that's going to be your deductible. Your premium may be higher, but you want to make sure that that damage beyond that $5,000 mark can be covered. Others who have a large risk or loss run who can't afford that huge premium increase may decide to go up as high as $50,000 on a deductible. So they're taking the risk that they're not going to get coverage for any damage done that costs less than $50,000.
Sure. That makes
sense. It's a major risk, and it may be, as I said, the statute requires that the executive board purchase it where reasonable. It may be that that's the reasonable value that they can get given their history, their loss history. So that deductible can be problematic. There's also the issue of more and more policies, and it may be almost all policies at this point, having a per unit deductible on losses. This is very frustrating, I think, for many associations, many unit owners, in that, for instance, remember a couple of years ago when we had that huge ice damming problem with all kinds of, we had all kinds of snow on the roofs, houses were crunching down. Well, what it created for associations was this tremendous ice damming problem, that where ice would dam up near the edge of the roof, the water would melt ultimately and get into the units. So you had hundreds and hundreds of units in an association that had suffered damage, but it wasn't so catastrophic. It may be $2,500, $3,000. And insurance companies really took a hard hit. Many of them, though, had already had these deductibles in place so that if the damage was $200 or $2,500, there was a deductible of $2,500 for each unit that was affected. So now associations with 100 units affected by this are looking at, you do the math, $250,000 of losses that were uninsurable. So a major challenge.
Oh, yeah, I don't even know what you would do in that situation.
Well, what you do as an association is you get creative. There's unit owner coverage, homeowner coverage called HO6. Okay. That's for condo association units. And that's basically for the unit owner, personal insurance for the inside of the unit to cover various things like property damage, somebody slips in their unit, personal property damage, and also something that allows for the payment of damage that they cause. Now, if they cause damage for something they're doing inside their unit, they cause damage to the association, there may be coverage for that as well. So there's a possible avenue to take that, shift that risk, that deductible risk, from the association to the unit owner through their insurance coverage. Homeowner coverage is nominal in comparison as far as costs go. It may run anywhere between $300 and $600-$700 per year, versus association of 100 units, the insurance could run as high as $60,000, $70,000, $125,000. So the ability for an association to shift that risk, the ability to not go into the unit owner's pocket every time there is a major storm like that or something akin to that, allows for these associations to survive, frankly, financially. The statute, in my belief and my reading of it and many other attorneys' reading of it, allows for and it must require that the master policy, the association's policy, the one that they're required to purchase, is the master policy, which means it's primary. But it doesn't mean it's exclusive, and I think there's an important distinction there. Many insurance carriers try to argue that, no, the association is responsible for everything. Well, that's not what the statute says, and it's not the way I read it. It says that the association's insurance coverage is primary. It does not say it's exclusive. So where there's other coverage and other sources to pay for losses, that the association's well within its legal rights to pursue that. And I think that when associations become aware of that, they can create certain policies and certain plans that can address those catastrophic losses that somehow end up as gaps in coverage. And we have been certainly educating and instructing our clients accordingly, and with great success in many areas. So it's still, I think, an area in development. I think many people feel uncomfortable with its application because they do a cursory look at the statute and they say, well, it just says primary. No, it doesn't. It doesn't say that only. And I think that we're going to have, greater success in managing these losses going forward, understanding that dichotomy between primary and exclusive. So So insurance presents to associations these tremendous burdens in terms of coverage, the types of coverage they have, the varying levels of coverage that they're required to have, complying with the statutory provisions within 255, complying with their governing documents that require certain amounts of coverage, weighing that, shopping that, you know, going to various brokers and shopping those various policies to see what's best for the association, because a board's duty is to protect the association, the corporate body, okay, and that financial viability. That inures ultimately to the unit owners, but the board must look to the association, that corporate body's financial well-being. And the best way to do that is to weigh the costs against the risks in insurance policy, just as an insurance company weighs the costs and the risks. So that is what today's about. I've gone into it. I know we're coming up against a soft break here. So when we get back, I'm going to introduce a very good friend of mine, and he's going to be able to give us all kinds of help.
You're pretty much doing my job here, Ron. Like you said, this is Ask the Experts. I'm going to, in the next segment, like you said, you're going to interview Rich Bouvier of Bouvier Insurance. We're going to get the experts talking together, and it's going to be really interesting. A lot of great information. Keep it tuned right here on the Talk of Connecticut.
You got it.
Bender Anderson and Barba PC is in the unique position of being able to offer their clients proven solutions derived from the depth and breadth of their experience. They offer services for homeowner associations in the areas of general counsel, common fee collection and foreclosure, document revisions and amendments, rules enforcement, association borrowing, contract review, developer issues, construction defects litigation, and mediation and facilitation of meetings. Their best practices strategy delivers professional expertise to their clients in the most cost-effective manner possible. Bender Anderson and Barba PC extensive experience means that they have been exposed to a vast range of problems, which gives them the ability to anticipate problems and offer effective solutions. They promote community and responsible leadership in the associations they serve. We also educate our clients, preparing them to address the challenges of running an association. Call Bender Anderson and Barba PC at 203-248-6440. That's 203-248-6440. Bender Anderson and Barba PC is in the unique position of being able to offer their clients proven solutions derived from the depth and breadth of their experience. They offer services for homeowner associations in the areas of general counsel, common fee collection and foreclosure, document revisions and amendments, rules enforcement, association borrowing, contract review, developer issues, construction defects litigation, and mediation and facilitation of meetings. Their best practices strategy delivers professional expertise to their clients in the most cost-effective manner possible. Bender Anderson and Barba PC extensive experience means that they have been exposed to a vast range of problems, which gives them the ability to anticipate problems and offer effective solutions. They promote community and responsible leadership in the associations they serve. We also educate our clients, preparing them to address the challenges of running an association. Call Bender Anderson and Barba PC at 203-248-6440. That's 203-248-6440.
Welcome back to Ask the Experts. I'm Brian Forster. I'm here speaking with attorney Ron Barba of Bender Anderson and Barba, and also have a special guest, Rich Bouvier of Bouvier Insurance. And I'm just going to pass it off to you, Ron. Let the experts, Rich and Ron, you guys can talk amongst yourselves.
Thanks, Brian. Look, Rich Bouvier has been providing master insurance policies to condominiums since 2000. It's no mistake that he's here today, because he really is one of the true experts in this particular field. He's a graduate and an alum from my favorite UConn. You're wearing the sweatshirt, as you should today, Brian. Thank you very much. Rich has been a past president of the Connecticut chapter of the Community Association Institute, and he's also served on numerous boards and is a regular contributor to the Common Interest publication. His agency, Bouvier Insurance, is a family-owned firm with offices throughout Connecticut and Rhode Island, and as I understand now, in Nashville, Tennessee. We've known each other for many years, and I can say without qualification that Rich is a source of all information relating to community association coverage. Thanks for being here, Rich.
Ron, thanks for the invitation. Brian, thanks for having me.
There's some areas, Rich, I know we're limited with time, and I want to just cover some areas and give you a sort of a primer for it, and then we can talk a little further into it. I want you to help me discuss the state of the common interest community insurance industry, maybe provide some tips for boards when they're shopping for policies, give them some strategies and what things to do, what things not to do. There are some new concerns regarding cyber versus wire transfer and computer fraud that I think are really new topics that I know you've had some involvement in, and I'd love for you to give me some input and some of our listeners. And also replacement cost averages increasing in recent history. So again, thanks for being here. I know that we don't nearly have enough time to discuss all that needs to be discussed regarding insurance coverage, but we'll hit on some of the big topics and see where that gets us, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, so given the different types of coverage and the association that an association must buy, how does a board even know where to start?
More often than not, a board of directors is going to be having their insurance reviewed, whether it's a budgetary meeting or at the direction of a professional property manager, or with any luck, their current insurance agent is bringing options to the table for the renewal process. But when a board of directors or a newly appointed board member starts to seek alternative quotes, and an agency like myself, we get the opportunity to start doing the investigation and looking deeply into the community's needs. We take it as an opportunity to engineer a portfolio. We don't look at what the previous agent did. We don't assume that that was perfection. We want to give an independent opinion, and then at that point present it to the board relative to the pricing costs. See if we can catch their attention there. If I cost, you know, significantly more, I may not get their attention. But when we have the opportunity to talk about coverage details and concerns, these policies, that it may seem very, very straightforward, there are nuances where, as of just recently, small association had a nice, inexpensive portfolio with another agent. When I looked at it, there was a glaring concern about the building coverage, brought it to their attention. I won the day, but more importantly, I provided them an appropriate amount of building coverage that I felt they truly should focus their premium dollars as well as their concern with.
You know, you mentioned the word investigation, and I want to delve a little bit deeper into that. When you talk about investigation, what do you really mean?
I'm going to get in the car and I'm going to inspect the association firsthand. I'm going to walk the buildings. I'm going to take pictures front and rear. I'm going to try to make note where the fire hydrants are on site. I'm going to observe the sidewalks, handrails, whether or not there's charcoal grills on decks. I'm going to look at the roof lines. I'm going to try to do my best to see if the landscaping is kept up to speed, that the paving is kept up to snuff with in terms of tripping, fall hazards, things of that nature, cracks. I'm going to do what my underwriter will do after I issue a policy. I don't want any hidden surprises. But the more information that I can provide to the insurance companies that I represent and demonstrate that I'm on site doing my due diligence and trying to create a very, very complete picture for what the association's insurance needs should be, the more successful all parties will be long term.
Now, when you discover these sort of insurance risks, do you advise the boards on ways to manage those risks or to avoid them?
Certainly. It's going to come down to a candid conversation that if I'm walking, doing the roster of addresses, building to building, unit to unit, and I find cracked sidewalks, I'll take pictures and I'll share that with the board of directors or the authorized representative, more often a property manager or somebody in that capacity. So this is going to be a sore subject with any insurance company having the opportunity to provide the coverage. And the sole reason being a cracked sidewalk, a slip or a trip and slip hazard, if you will. And we just want to avoid that. You can have a small investment to fix that crack of, you know, a few hundred dollars more often than not, and save in considerable amount of claim costs going forward and an injury. It's not all about money. It's about, you know, quality of life and preventing somebody from getting hurt on site.
Well, I know that as part of our practice, we spend time with boards discussing maintenance and repair standards that they can institute. And it's certainly called for in the statute. And one of those things that we think of when we're trying to draft these, and they're never the same for any particular association, as you can well know, is to try to identify those common loss sources. Water heaters, for instance, a major loss. I know I had one client that suffered a $685,000 loss because of one failed water heater.
That's a significant claim.
For one heater. Now, it happened to flow down about 13 floors and affected about 18 or 19 units. But that's a perfect example of something small, like you said, that slip and fall danger on the sidewalk. Well, we in the maintenance and repair standards will often say, look, manage that risk by requiring water heaters to be replaced on a regular basis and never to be kept beyond their reasonable expected life. Leak-proof hoses for washers and dryers, putting the maintenance responsibilities on the unit owners that have the first chance to see if there's a risk, you know, the fire things, changing out or cleaning dryer vents, those sorts of things.
I'm a huge advocate of everything that you're talking about with these written maintenance standards that are allowed to be enforced by every association in the state of Connecticut. And it comes from, in my opinion, the taking care of your home. These are items or devices that wear out or get clogged or become dangerous with usage over time. You mentioned hot water tanks. If I had to give you an estimate, water damage is a significant component of what we pay property claims for. And water tanks, without a doubt, is going to be a very, very common source of loss for these associations. Looking down the list, aside from you mentioned the burst-resistant hoses, I get concerned when it comes to smoke detectors. Smoke detectors are a hot topic for me, no pun intended with that. But it becomes a function of, they have a useful life. They become coated in dust. I believe the radioactive material that causes the dust or the particulate sensing becomes less effective over time. This is something that's rarely talked about, that they have a useful life of an estimated 10 years. Again, it's not about the property. It's about the loss of life.
At the end of the day, that's really what counts. So I think that that's an important thing that I don't know if I've really considered, and I think we're going to incorporate into our maintenance standards one of those basic things. So let's talk a little bit about when pricing a policy. You've talked about going there, investigating it. Do you offer the client, pricing based on deductibles, as I discussed earlier?
Yeah. When I look at an association and I'm making a recommended portfolio, the crux of it's going to be the building coverage. We want to determine the gross square footage. We want to understand how large is the association. And then based upon the community it's located in, the size, quality, construction quality, the intricacies of the trim features, we'll look at the field cards for the municipality, and we'll try to get an understanding of the like kind and quality of the building itself. And then what we're doing is we're applying a cost per square foot based upon experience, recently paid claims, or suggestions from our underwriters with the various insurance companies as to what makes sense to insure the building for. I mean, historically, when I started in 2000, $150 a square foot was a common play. I did a little bit of a research project last summer, and I took 20 samples of replacement cost estimations that we did for single-family homes in the state of Connecticut, all counties. And the lowest that I found for a small, simple home was $133 a foot. And the largest that I found was at $272 per square foot because it was a larger house, more custom features, etc. But the average of that sample was $183. This is of concern to me just because not all policies are created equal. When I see an association, I would like to fully understand what's the likelihood of a total loss, a major catastrophic loss. That being said, if we can get you a policy that has an enhancing endorsement such as extended replacement cost or guaranteed replacement cost, or there's more than one building, a healthy spread of risk where a fire can't eliminate the entire community, then we can look at other options. But we try to evaluate what the true risk is.
My name is Ron Barba. This is the Ask the Experts program. And with me today is Rich Bouvier of Bouvier Insurance. We're discussing community association insurance coverage and some of the complexities and some of the challenges. And Rich, as you go through your considerations, it's for me almost intimidating to think of all the things that need to happen. It impresses upon me the importance of having an insurance professional that understands the complexities and be able to manage and to instruct their clients about those. So it's clear to me, and as I go through this process, and even in my preparation for today's show, I really get the sense that many boards, and they're often lay boards that don't have an insurance background, can be overwhelmed by this sort of subject matter. Do you find that as well?
Sure. Particularly with the smaller self-managed associations, we can see an insurance policy that has renewed for 15 years, same agency, same insurance provider, and with no annual review. And the policy may be providing insufficient coverage. It may not be adhering to modern statute. It may not be providing the appropriate coverage to cover the association funds that you mentioned with the fidelity coverage. I mean, we use that magic rule of thumb, the 3 months common fees plus savings and reserves, to create that threshold. There's not necessarily going to be an audit done, but in the event that there were a theft and insufficient funds, the board of directors can have themselves in a little bit of a situation as to why the insurance policies purchased for the community were insufficient at the time of loss. So my job is to put my best foot forward and make a recommendation. Aside from selling insurance and making a living doing it, I want to demonstrate to every community that we have the level of expertise at Bouvier Insurance, that we understand statute, we look to the governing documents, and we want to make a cohesive portfolio recommendation that's going to cover the basis of all parties involved.
Well, I can tell you from my perspective as a general counsel for these associations that your reputation is earned when it comes down to these sorts of things. We generally call you because there are issues. I'm not an insurance attorney, and while I understand the legal requirements and I can advise my clients accordingly, some of the intricacies of this coverage and some of the things that go into analyzing that coverage and the cost of it really have to go to you, and I imagine that the level of education that you and your staff have to keep up just to stay up with the various insurance policies changing almost from year to year has got to be pretty demanding.
Yeah, it's interesting. It keeps the job interesting. There's no doubt about it. In the state of Connecticut, as you know, we have the Connecticut chapter of Community Association Institute, a wonderful organization. If you don't mind me saying their name on the radio, I'll say it again.
Go for it.
CAICT.org is the website. It's Community Association Institute. This is a nonprofit organization that provides tools, resources, and education to common interest communities, whether it's a homeowners association or a condominium association. And as you mentioned, I'm a past president. But the education that we put on with the ABC sessions or the trade show, it's really geared to help the volunteer board of directors, you know, find the appropriate law firm that can speak condo law, find the appropriate CPA that can handle tax ramifications for that type of corporation. And additionally, insurance agents that speak the Common Interest Ownership Act that you alluded to, as well as having a variety of insurance companies available to get quotes from.
It really is its own language, isn't it?
Yeah, my language is, whether it's GRC, ERC, CAU, GNY, I could talk like that all day long, but it's going to boil down to having an agent that understands what your community needs, having options in the event of claims and pricing goes up. Can you get alternative quotes or can you get creative with deductibles where the insurance company sees that the association is taking some of the risk in-house, as you mentioned, self-insuring with a larger deductible or maybe a per unit or a per building deductible for water or ice damage that we alluded to. But the insurance companies, they like to have skin in the game with the association. And I'm a firm believer of risk transfer. That's the basis of my industry. The associations can't have $10 million in the bank, so they go out and buy an insurance policy for that need. As it pertains to the lack of coverage created by the deductibles, that sometimes and more often than not can be transferred to units or unit owners where the loss occurs with support from a properly written unit owner's policy that you mentioned earlier.
I want to move on to another subject that I alluded to and even mentioned in the first segment, which deals with per unit deductibles. You heard my discussion about that sort of the idea that there are smaller deductibles applicable to losses on a per unit basis than it would be under a sort of a catastrophic loss. The ice damming problem that we had several years ago is a perfect example where you had these minimal losses in the $3,000 to $4,000 or $5,000 range, and the insurance companies having had per unit deductibles really leaving the associations almost self-insuring.
It became an inconvenience, I would call it. Easy for me to say I don't have 125 damaged units with a $5,000 per unit deductible. That's a pretty significant financial inconvenience. But if you were to look at the nature of this, when we see the per unit deductibles, some insurance companies will have a mandatory ice dam situation. Some can apply a per unit water, and that's typically only going to be applied if the association has a tremendous loss history with repeated exposure to similar losses. There has to be something done if hot water tanks are leaking every other month. Something needs to be done if there's poor insulation and we have burst pipes. We just had a cold snap between the holidays, and I think our agency processed over 200 burst pipe claims in a week period.
Wow.
So it's significant, and it just takes the proper weather condition or the proper wind pointing in the right direction to get certain situations to rear their ugly heads.
Well, we certainly don't have enough time today to discuss all the intricacies of flood insurance, and I'm going to leave that for another day. But I think that suffice to say with flood insurance that there are varying levels of insurance beyond the minimums that FEMA requires. Would you agree with that?
Certainly. When I have the opportunity to talk about flood insurance, the discussion is quite brief. The properties that are situated in these flood zones as determined by FEMA, it's not just the association or an insurance agent making the recommendation to buy the coverage. The lending institutions providing the loans and the mortgages to the units will do their audits internally and require appropriate coverage. So we follow directions when it comes to flood. It's not necessarily an opportunity for me to make an appropriate recommendation.
Yeah. Now, that sort of that mention of lenders brings me to the subject that I wanted to move on to, which is HO6 policies. These are the homeowner policies. Does Bouvier Insurance provide those as well?
Certainly. We created a division of our agency that we refer to as CondoLogic.net. And the purpose of CondoLogic was to help the unit owners in the communities that we provide the master policies for to purchase a properly written unit owner policy. You mentioned they're not terribly expensive earlier. You're right. Starting at $300, maybe $400, $500, depending on your personal insurance needs for your personal property, how much stuff you'd like to insure, whether you have jewelry you'd like to insure. But when it comes down to a properly written policy, we do want to see building coverage on every policy written in the state of Connecticut. You may not have to have the total amount by virtue of the state law pulling in a lot of the details on the master policy, but we want to see a nominal amount. In the event that the association can charge back that master policy deductible, this is where the community, the unit owners, can seek to get the reimbursement for covered losses.
Well, not only covered losses, but very, very often you'll see an association that has a substantial shortfall related to a loss would do a special assessment. And these homeowner policies will provide that sort of loss assessment coverage as well. Is that true?
You're absolutely right. And that's not just limited to property. That can apply to a liability loss also.
Yeah. So I think that in shopping, that unit owners in particular need to be hyper aware of the availability of the insurance. But I think as far as I know, lenders are increasingly requiring it as part of their underwriting requirements. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, we don't often hear that a lender is requiring it. I think I'm on the end where the unit owner is purchasing it and then supplying my data or my policy to their lender. I wish it were more, but you know, when we have to, we can provide evidence of that coverage. And I think it does make sense. I know that these lenders have their financial investment in that property covered by the master policy, but understanding that their units are properly covered for any shortfalls is important too.
You know, I haven't touched on this at all, and it is a fairly important coverage. Directors and officer coverage.
Sure. That's professional liability for the volunteer boards as well as their managing bodies and their management companies that are volunteering on behalf of the community. This will cover you for your decisions. My recommendation is follow your governing documents.
Yeah, well, certainly the governing documents will call for that sort of coverage. I know that at Benarison and Barba, we ask and advise our clients to shop it differently than rather than just a rider or an add-on to a general liability policy, but to really spend some time in looking at the kind of coverages that are available. And it may be from an entirely different carrier, but that they spend the time rather than, as you say, you have some of these communities that just keep on renewing the year in, year out, getting the kind of coverage that will cover things like violations of law. We see so many of these Fair Housing Act claims being brought against association boards, and then they come to find out that that's an exclusion under their coverage, under D&O.
You hit the nail on the head with that. These are very inexpensive policies in the grand scheme of things. And just like any line item for coverage, there are specialty insurance companies that have focused or created a policy form that is engineered and written, manuscripted is the right word, to specifically cover the needs of a residential common interest community.
Well, I think that, and just for those property managers out there that help associations purchase these policies, it might be it's a good little tip to make sure that cost is not the only factor. You can buy a thin policy that that you're supposed to be covered by, and if it's too thin, you may want to put your own carrier on notice that you might not have enough coverage under the association's insurance policy. So, I'd like to. I know that we're closing in on our time, and it goes by so fast. And I really do appreciate it for those listening. It's Ron Barba on Ask the Experts, and I'm speaking to Rich Bouvier of Bouvier Insurance about community association insurance coverage issues. We've covered a lot of ground today. There is so much more, and it goes more and more in depth. I think if you take away anything from today's program, you should consider really looking at your policy coverage, talking to your broker, talking to your agent, understanding what those relationships are, expecting that your broker and your agent are going to come to your property, look at it, not just give you a quote from afar, but really to come and take a look at what you've got and to make sure that you've done your due diligence. Because frankly, as boards go, you know, you're not in trouble until you don't do your job. You know, and as a board member, your obligation is to act like a corporate director, and that means finding the information, finding the people that have that information, and following the advice that they give. So here's one expert to another expert saying, you know, talk to this man. When the time comes, he's going to save you money, I believe. And enough of that the soapbox lecture. We'll move on. I do want to talk about the interplay between the master policy and the HO6 policies.
Certainly. So when we have the master policy, as you said earlier, the Common Interest Ownership Act is going to require it to be the primary source of funds, not exclusive source of funds. And I fully agree with that. And what we may see is the size or nature of the loss is going to determine how the master policy responds or doesn't respond. If you have a $10,000 deductible and you have a $5,000 water leak, the policy is not going to be activated. It's pretty cut and dry. And the question is, how is that lack of funds or that shortfall going to be handled by the association? And that can really be boiled down to how the governing documents are written, or if the loss generated from a failure to comply with a written maintenance standard. Something we haven't talked about as far as a written maintenance standard is, everybody in Connecticut in the Northeast, please keep your heat on, first and foremost, in the cold months. And then if you are traveling, keep it at 55, 58 degrees or above. It's just one of those simple things. Do your due diligence to maintain that property.
Well, let's talk about the downside if you don't.
Some policies will have a specific exclusion for intentional failure to maintain heat in a unit, and they won't provide coverage for a water loss generating from a burst pipe claim within that unit. Some insurance companies will follow the form that heat must be maintained in a building, but if it's a single unit structure, that would apply. So when we're dealing with New England, when we're dealing with Connecticut, pipes will freeze. We will have sub-zero weather now and again. It's very, very important that this one little detail, you just keep the heat on. Let's say you keep the heat on, a circuit breaker pops or a furnace malfunctions, there's going to be forensics. If the insurance adjusters can determine that you did your due diligence to keep the heat on, there's going to be no issue with claim. But if it's obvious that, you know, heat hadn't been paid or an electric bill had not been paid for a month or so prior to, that's where we could run into an issue. So just please keep your heat on.
Imagine, and certainly at Bender and Santa Barbara, one of the primary elements in any maintenance and repair standard that we're going to install is the requirement that the minimum heat be left on. Because let's face it, if there's no coverage, those repairs have to be made by the association, and someone's going to have to pay for it. And the question is whether or not you ask all the owners to pay for the reckless or intentional act by one unit owner or shifting that risk onto that unit owner. And we believe, and I know that most of the boards, all the boards that I've ever advised, believe that that's the appropriate way. So you decide to save a couple of bucks on your heating, it may cost you your unit, because it's not only the unit that could be affected. If that water flows, as I said in my example, where we had I had a $685,000 water heater bill, you know, the deductible associated with that was $185,000, because there was a per unit deductible for each unit that was affected. And the unit owner responsible for that maintenance, under that maintenance standard, was on the hook for $185,000. And her HO6 carrier paid for everything.
And how much did her HO6 policy cost?
Did it cost her $300?
$300, $400, $500, $600 for that amazing amount of protection when you live in a common interest community. So that's a crummy situation. I wouldn't wish it upon anybody. But the fact that we have insurance policies picking up the vast, vast majority of those bills, that's the purpose of risk transfer. And that's when it works in its most beautiful form. I'd prefer not to have a burst or a leaking hot water tank in the first place. But when you have the incident, you want to have the coverage.
When you're looking at the community's overall financial viability, these types of mechanisms, these types of vehicles available to shift the risk to the various carriers is critical. I know I said that at the beginning. I'm saying it again. Must be important. I know that you've been involved in a different area of loss prevention, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Cyber and wire fraud coverage.
It's genuinely a hot topic. When we talk about cyber, I'd like to delineate when an association's funds are stolen because of somebody hacking a bank account. When money's taken, we're going to be looking towards the crime or fidelity coverage. When personal identifiable information is taken, and we're talking about the restoration costs or reputation restoration, that's going to lend to the cyber side. So what we see with common interest communities is the protection of the money. We talk about this little line item called the fidelity policy, and it's going to be the least expensive component of the portfolio. But a properly written fidelity policy is going to have a line item for somebody stealing money. That's your treasurer, that's property manager, writing a check and leaving. But if we have a wire transfer fraud, somebody, or a computer fraud, which can be separate line items or combined, although I've seen depositors' forgery becoming an important line item too. To check these boxes on the application with a reputable insurance company, it may cost $100, $150 more per year, depending on the amount of coverage needed, but it's not an expensive line item to do this properly. Some insurance companies are actually going to be lumping in depositors' forgery, wire transfer fraud, computer fraud in the future, just because it is becoming a little bit more important. So they're going to pick up the slack, but at this moment in time, it's a concern and a topic worth talking about.
Yeah, I can't agree more. Let's talk a little bit about high risk associations. I know we're down to just a couple of minutes here, and where they find themselves being dropped by a particular carrier. What can they possibly do to meet their requirements?
Well, I mean, first we want to look at why are you being dropped? Why is that policy being non-renewed by the current insurance company? It's more often than not, we're going to be looking at a snapshot of time with the claim history. And we look at a loss ratio. A loss ratio is the premium dollars paid to the insurance company as compared to the claim dollars paid out of an insurance company. We all want to make a dollar. When it comes to a situation where an insurance company is going to say, we're not interested in renewing, we got to find out why. And can the association do a capital improvement, whether it's burst-resistant hoses, an insulation project to help stem ice damming? Is it a mandatory association-wide hot water tank replacement program or chimney cleaning? There are certain ways that an association can spend community money wisely to demonstrate to any new insurance company due diligence to prevent future loss. In addition to that, do we want special deductibles, larger deductibles, and transfer the risk from the policies to the board of directors and the association just to maintain those premiums going forward?
As I predicted, I have 1,000 other questions for you and no time to ask them. You and I have had these conversations on the golf course, at CAI meetings and other places, and I do truly appreciate you coming in today.
I appreciate the invitation.
You have been listening to Ask the Experts. Brian Forster, still in the room, quietly sitting there, patiently letting me take over his show.
Just a fly on the wall over here.
My name is Ron Barba. I've been talking to Rich Bouvier of Bouvier Insurance. I appreciate everyone listening and look forward to more shows like this.
And like you said, this has been Ask the Experts. Every week we have experts on the show to learn more about various issues and things that are important. Ron, Rich, thank you again so much for being here. You're making my job easy. I really appreciate it. Hope to have you on again very soon. And thank you to all the listeners out there. This is Ask the Experts on the Talk of Connecticut.
Thanks, Brian.
Bender Anderson and Barba PC is in the unique position of being able to offer their clients proven solutions derived from the depth and breadth of their experience. They offer services for homeowner associations in the areas of general counsel, common fee collection and foreclosure, document revisions and amendments, rules enforcement, association borrowing, contract review, developer issues, construction defects litigation, and mediation and facilitation of meetings. Their best practices strategy delivers professional expertise to their clients in the most cost-effective manner possible. Bender Anderson and Barba PC extensive experience means that they have been exposed to a vast range of problems, which gives them the ability to anticipate problems and offer effective solutions. They promote community and responsible leadership in the associations they serve. We also educate our clients, preparing them to address the challenges of running an association. Call Bender Anderson and Barba PC at 203-248-6440. That's 203-248-6440.